Here we go. We're beginning at the new perek at the bottom of Lamed Bet Amud Bet. The Mishnah says, "Ein bein hamudar hanaami chaveru, umudar imenu ma'achal." So, in an instance where an individual takes a neder by which his friend will no longer be able to get hana from him, or he terms the neder as being that the person will not be able to get ma'achal, seems to be eat by him or pleasure of ma'achal from him, then what is the difference between the statement of hana'av versus the statement or the restriction of ma'achal? So the Mishnah says, "En bein mudar hana'av mechaviro, lo mudar imenu ma'achal ela drisat regel, v'kelim she'enu sim behem ochel nefesh." The only difference between them is the right to traverse his property, which is purely a hana'ah issue, has nothing to do with ma'achal. So that ability to go through his property or take a shortcut through his property is permitted if he's only restricted in ma'achal, but if he's restricted in hana'ah, then it would not be permitted. And the same is true with kelim she'en osim behem ochel nefesh, utensils by which one does not prepare food or has nothing to do with food preparation. In that instance, the Isur Hana'ah would still govern with regards to those kelim, but if the Isur was only from Ma'achal, those kelim would be permitted. Hamudar Ma'achal Mechaviru, person who is restricted in Ma'achal from his friend, Lo Yashilenu Nafe Ukvara Verechayim Vitanur. The individual cannot lend to him these utensils, whether it's a sift, a sieve, a mill, or an oven. Aval Mashilo, he is permitted to lend him Chaluk, tunic, tabat is a ring, vitalit is a cloak, unizamim, or jewelry of any sort. So here the Mishnah distinguishes between two groups of items, one in which is subsumed under the restriction of hana'ah, and another group of items that are not restricted by the isur ma'achal. And what is the difference between the objects in the first list and the objects in the second list? The second list seems obvious that they have nothing to do with ma'achal, and the Gemara will discuss what exactly this list has to do with. The first list is interesting as well. Why did they pick these items to say that they're restricted as being items, utensils that are used in food preparation? So if you look in the Rosh, Rosh says, Sha'ochel omeid bitocho la'achila. That normally when I would think of a kli that is associated with ochel nefesh, I would think about a utensil in which the food is served or kept in. None of these items that are here are utensils by which the food is kept in them. As the Rosh describes over here, Alavalhani Goreim de Goreim Mikru. These are a second derivative of being ma'achal or clay ma'achal or machshire ma'achal, and therefore you would have thought maybe they should be mutarim. In the end, they are asurim, even though they are not directly associated with the ma'achal in the sense that you would store the food in them or you would present the food in them, but they are used in the processing of the food and they have utility towards the preparation of food. And that's the chiddush of the Mishnah, that these items, the nafeh, the kvara, the rechaim, and the tanur, are included under that restriction. Tosafot has a slightly different formulation of this, which is dahana hameviya lidei ma'achal hu, that has to be hana that comes towards ma'achal, elo afilu nafeh kvara, even though he can't eat from the prepared item after the utility of this utensil has been exhausted, all of these objects here are not the final stage in terms of the food preparation, not the final point in which the food would be left. But of course, by the nafer, the kvara, the rechayim, these are all way stations in the preparation of the food. So you would have thought that they are not subsumed or included under clay ma'achal. And that's the chiddush of the Mishnah again, that these items are still included under this restriction of isur ma'achal, and you would have thought they are mutarim, and therefore the Mishnah comes to be mechadesh to you that that isn't the case. And the Ran has a third formulation of this, that you would have thought the only things that are restricted are a kedera that you actually cook in, or a shibud, a spit that you roast on, because those are directly associated with the preparation of the food. Avahani goreim de goreim ninu. These are already second derivatives in the preparation, so maybe they would be mutarim. Our Mishnah comes to dispel that possibility and say to us that these kelim are restricted in this instance. So now the Gemara asks, Mantano, who's the author of our Mishnah? And Rav Ada Barava, Rabbi Eliezer he. Must be that it's Rabbi Eliezer. D'tanya, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Afilu Vitur Asur B'Mudar Hana'a. When a person takes a neder to restrict an individual from getting benefit from them, then that restriction includes even when the individual is mivater, where he simply relinquishes a right that he has, or he doesn't demand a right that he's entitled to, and that's enough to be deemed hana'a, and the person will be restricted in it. Tosafot, in describing the Mishnah, talks about a case where drisat regel, the case where you take a shortcut through the other person's property, or you traverse their property, is a case, the makom to lo kamte inche. It's a place where people don't normally care. They let people walk through there. Kagon, similar, what's an example of that? Bik'ah bimotachama. Talking about valleys or open fields during the summertime. So during the summertime, there's nothing planted in the fields. There's nothing there. They're dry. People cut through the fields. And as a baal of the sadeh, you wouldn't care because you're really not utilizing the field in any way that the traversing of it by other individuals would hurt your ability to plant in the following season or would hurt your crops at all because they don't exist. It's the summertime. So since they're normally people would have no hakpada, you would have thought that in that instance there should be no iser hana'a. Because if a person doesn't care, then why should that be deemed to be hana'a that you grant to that individual? You don't care if that individual goes, you don't care if anybody goes. There's not any association in particular with this individual. The Mishnah comes along and tells us that drisat haregel, that traversing of the property, using it as a shortcut, even though the owner of the property doesn't care, is deemed to be hana'a. Whose opinion is that? That's Rabbi Eliezer. Obviously, the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Eliezer and believe in that instance where the person is not makpid, then you can't call that hana'a because the person doesn't even pay attention to it. It's not even on his mind. Anybody walks through there, he doesn't say who is, who isn't. It's something that's completely open as if it's hefker in that sense. And they believe that's not deemed to be hana'a. Now then, Rabbi Eliezer believes that even vitur, even a simple relinquishment, like here, exerting your rights to prevent people from crossing through the field, that is considered to be hana'a. Rashi brings examples of that, and the Rishonim all bring a similar example, is, for instance, the storekeeper that sells product or produce to an individual. So many times, after he sold them the produce, he throws a little one in extra. He just throws one in because he wants the buyers to come back again. They want a good feeling and create goodwill there. So you would have thought over there that also that's vitur, that maybe there you would not classify that as being hana'a. In the end, what we see here is that it is hana'a according to Rabbi Eliezer. And since it's considered to be hana'a, he's the author of the Mishnah that says that drisat regel would be restricted from someone who is mudar hana'a versus someone who was mudar ma'achal. Now the Gemara continues, mudar ma'achal mechavero lo yashilenu. Person who is restricted in getting machal, or the benefit of machal from his friend, he should not lend him the following items. Vaha min machal nadar. Why is he restricted in these utensils? The neder says that he's mudar hana'a mi machal, that he's restricted in getting hana'a from the food. This has nothing to do with food. These are utensils used in the preparation of food. We have an association with food, but it's not food. So why should it be restricted? So Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Ba'omer, Hanat ma'achalcha alai. It's an instance where the individual took the neder in such a fashion that any hana'a from your ma'achal will be restricted to me. So in that instance, he's not just restricting the ma'achal, the food itself, but he's also restricting the hana'at ma'achal, benefit that derives from the ma'achal. So the Gemara says, well, that doesn't necessarily mean utensils used in the processing of food. That more likely includes something like this. Ema, shlo yel'os chitim v'itein al makato, that he shouldn't chew up the kernels of the wheat. They used to chew them up. Lil'os is a terminology that's used in the Gemara anytime you eat something in an unusual manner, not the normal way that it's eaten. Over here, you're taking raw wheat kernels and you're chewing on them, seen to be a salve for injuries. So they would chew it up and then with that moisture and saliva on it, they used to place it on the wound in order to cure it. So in this case, that would be the restriction. You're getting a hana'a from the ma'achal. Typically, we talk about ma'achal, a restriction in ma'achal is that you can't consume, you cannot eat that ma'achal, that food item. Over here, you're not eating the food item, you're getting hana'ah from the food item. You're getting a benefit from that food item. And that's where you're utilizing it for medicinal purposes. You're not going to ingest the food, but it's hanat machal. And that's how I would explain the neder. If he took such a neder, I would not assume that the neder meant that he can't benefit from machal. He can't benefit from items that are used in processing machal. That doesn't seem to be the meaning of what he's saying over here. It just simply seems to state that not only will he not get benefit from the food itself, he will not get any hana'ah from the food itself. Well, what is the hana'ah that would be associated with the food? That's something like this, where he's using it for its curative properties in a medicinal sense. Who exactly is chewing over here? Most of the Rishonim explain over here that the mudar hana'ah is the one. He's taking the food of the madir, and then he's chewing on it and putting on his makah, on his wound. So that's the problem. Tosafot over here suggests that it's the madir who chewed it up, that it was mishum hanat machal lisatcha vafilo michitin shomadir atzmo. Even if it is the chitim of the madir himself, the one who took the neder itself. So in that instance, the problem is that the li'isa, that the chewing itself, is being done by the individual, by the madir, and that's what makes it restricted over here, is because of the fact that he does the li'isa, that he does the chewing on behalf of the person that is restricted in the hana'ah. And that chewing itself is a hana'ah that's being provided through the ma'achal. On the other hand, as we mentioned before, the Rishonim or other Rishonim believe here that we're talking about the Mudah Hana'ah chewing on it. He's the one who's chewing on it for his makah, for his wound. And the problem is that he's getting Hana'ah from the ma'achal of the individual who he's restricted from getting Hana'ah ma'achal from. Right, then Amar Rava. Rava offers an alternative way to word the neder so that it would include in it not only ma'achal, but also the clay ma'achal, as we saw in our Mishnah. Bomer hana'ah hamivi'ah lidei ma'achalcha alai. I will not get any benefit from something that brings the food to me. Meaning that anything that is used to make the food edible or to prepare the food will be restricted on me. Now, in this instance, you have here three different formulations. What's the relationship between the formulations? There's the first formulation, which is basically what's found in the Mishnah, which is that is mudar ma'achal. Is restricted in getting benefit from the food items of that individual. The next neder is the one suggested by Rabbi Shimon Lakish, which is Vomer Hanat Ma'achalcha Alai. Not only am I restricted in the benefit from the food, I'm restricted in the benefit of Hana from that food. Any derivative benefit that would come from that food, I'd also be restricted in. And then we have a third formulation, which is Rova's formulation, which is Hana'a Mevi Lidei, Ameviya Lidei Ma'achalcha. That it's hana'ah that comes through the preparation of the food items, or in preparation of the food items. So there you have now these three different categories. What's the relationship between them? The Ran believes that the three of them are independent in a sense, and they do not overlap. If you simply say that there's an Isur in machal, then you're restricted in getting food, or eating the food of that individual. If you say hana'at ma'achalcha, if you use that formulation, that of Rabbi Shimon Lakish, you'd be restricted, obviously, in the food items themselves. But in addition to that, you would also be restricted in the hana'ah that derives from the food, like the case of the li'isa, putting on the wound. The third formulation, which talks about hana'ah mevi'ali de machalcha, that would restrict the food, as well as utensils used in the preparation of the food. That which brings the food to its finished state would be restricted. On the other hand, li'isa, in that case, the chewing of the kernels and utilizing the food in that case would be permissible. Because here you don't have the extraneous language of hana'at machalchalai. And therefore the Ran sees the two answers, Shimon Lakish and Rova, as not being overlapping, but rather focused on different issues. So if you just talk about machal, that's the food. Hana'at machal takes you down a path that says that if you get benefit from the food substance, then it's a problem. That's the case of li'isa and putting the salve on the wound. There's another way to go, which is the language that Rava says, which is hana'ah mevi'ali de machalcha, that it's any hana'ah that brings the food to the finished state in which you can get benefit from, alai, that's what's restricted. That would only restrict the clay, ochel nefesh. It would not restrict the case of li'isa, chewing on it to use it as a salve on a wound. On the other hand, there are other Rishonim. Obviously, the Ran is responding to those Rishonim when he says he thinks it's incorrect. He says that this is cumulative in nature. which is machal would only restrict food items. Hanat machal chal would restrict food items plus the derivative benefits like the li'isa, where you chew it for the use as a salve. And then the final formulation, which is Rava's formulation, would subsume all of those items. It would include klei ochel nefesh plus li'isa plus the food item itself. So according to those Rishonim, it is a cumulative effect that each of these nidarim includes more. Whereas according to the Ran, each one is independent of each other and only includes what is specifically stated here. So the case of Hanat Machalcha would include using it for medicinal purposes, but would not include Klei Ochel Nefesh. And the formulation of Omer Hana'a Hamivyali De Machalcha Lai would include utensils of Ochel Nefesh, but would not include Lisa using it for medicinal purposes. Now, Amar Papa, Sak Lavi Perot, V'chamor Lavi Alav Perot, Afilu Tzana Ba'alma, Hana'a Meviya Lide Machalhu. So Rav Papa says that if you have a sack in order to transport fruits, a chamor, a donkey, to bring on it fruits, or maybe just a basket in general, those are all items that would be deemed as Hana'a Meviya Lide Machal. That is Hana'a. These items or these utensils are used in the process of preparing food or bringing food to its point where it can be utilized. And therefore, they would definitely be restricted if the person had said or formulated the neder in the way that Rava says, Bomer Hana'ami Viali De Machalcha Lai. He says that all of these items would also be included in the neder, and he would restrict him getting Hana from these items. By Rav Papa. But now Rav Papa queries, after he gives you the items where he's certain that that would be the din, now he wants to know in a case like this, Sus Lirkov Valav, if he lends him a horse to ride on, Vitaba'at Liraot Ba, or he lends him a ring or any type of jewelry in order for him to appear before others, Mahu, what's the din there? Mifsak Umezo Ba'are, Mai, what happens if he goes through his land as a shortcut to get to a certain location? So now, in terms of the shortcut through the other individual's land, over there it seems that the explanation is that he's trying to attend a mishteh or a si'uda. And so if he uses the shortcut through the friend's field, then he's actually accelerating his ability to get to the mishteh, therefore providing for him a benefit that will lead him to getting hana'ah from ochel in a more expedited manner. And because of that, it maybe should be restricted. With Suslur Kovalav, Vitaba'at, Lira'ot Ba, at least with Suslur Kovalav, you could argue that, again, this is way to expedite or to help him to get to a location where there is food. And that's the question of Rav Papa. On the other hand, it's interesting, Rashi notes this, and you see it echoed in the Rosh and in the Belly of Tosafot as well, that the reason he's putting on a Tabat or he's riding on the Sus is Kadesh Nagubo Kavot, is because he's trying to appear or give off a certain impression about who he is or who his stature is. And based on that, he will garner benefits that lead to food benefits, which is if he's seen to be a wealthy and rich aristocrat, then they let him cut the line when he gets to the mishteh, and he'll be let in earlier. And so therefore he'll get access to the food faster. Or maybe because of his standing or his stature, they'll give him more portions at the meal. They'll be more generous with the portions. And therefore, again, maybe that's associated with machal. And that's what the Rosh says, Kadesh Yechabdu Lo Hosif Lo Manot. Because they'll give him kavod and they'll give him more food because of who they think he is. So in each of these instances, Rav Papa is querying as to whether that's close enough to the point where the definition that we said before of Hana'a Miviyadi De Machachalai, which is Hainu Tikun, Udavar Sheyacholik Not Bo Machal, something that is used in the preparation of food, or something that can be utilized to purchase with it food, do these items qualify? Are these items deemed to be under that category and they would be restricted in Hana'a? Or maybe this is already too far-fetched. It's too derivative an issue. Just because he gets there faster on a horse doesn't mean that the horse is a utensil used in the preparation of food or accessing food. But the Ran notes that the difference between the first list of Rav Papa is a case that Hakravata Machal Elav, those are all instances or utensils that are used to bring the food closer to him. And in the second list, these are items or ways that he's getting closer to the food. So the first list of Rav Papa are about items that are being brought to the individual, or is using these items to bring the food to himself. And the second list of Rapapa is a case where he's trying to transport himself to the food or get there faster. And that's the difference in the two lists of Rapapa. So therefore, the first list that Rapapa brought down were all items that were used directly with the food items themselves. Kiddush being, as the Rosh notes over here, the fact that these items are utilized in transporting the food, but not necessarily in the preparation of the food. Nevertheless, they are subsumed under this nether that he took. Second list Rapapa brings down are items that help you access the food or get closer to the food or faster to the food. And that's the question Rapapa is querying as to whether those are deemed to be restricted under the language that Rava presented to us. In that case, my, what's the din? Tashma, let's look at our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, Ava mashil lo chaluk vitalit nizamim vitabaot, that he's allowed to lend him all of these items. Hey, chidami, why is he lending him these items? Ilei mishlo leiraot behen, he's lending him these items, but not to appear in public with these items on or to utilize them, then tzricha lemeimar? Then you have to tell me that it's mutar to lend him these items? If you're going to lend him a ring, and he can't wear the ring out in public, or if you're going to lend him a cloak, a tunic, whatever it is that you're giving to him, and he's not allowed to appear with it in public, then what type of benefit are you providing to him? So certainly there it should be mutar. Elalav, afilu leirot behen, must be that our mission is not in a case where he has permission to go out in public with these items. Viktoni, and it says on that, mashilo, so that he is allowed to lend it out. So you see over here, despite the fact that he's going to utilize this ring to give a certain amount of aura about himself or appearance of someone who is of stature, then our Mishnah says, go ahead, you can lend that item to him. You can give it to him. It's not considered to be a problem in the nether. When it says, lo, the olam shaloi ra'ot. Now the case in that last line in the Mishnah is a case where he does not have permission to appear in public in front of others with them. And the reason that these items were listed in the Seifa is not because it has to do with the Hashalah or not the Hashalah, but rather it's a contrast to that which is in the Mishnah, which is that in the Freisha of the Mishnah it says you may not lend out these items. Therefore, in the Seifa it wrote out items that you are allowed to lend out with. Now, those items might have some chiddush in them, but they're not very big chiddushim. They seem obvious that that should be the case. That's what Gemara asked. If it's a case where he's not allowed to wear them out in public, isn't it obvious that he can lend these items? It has nothing to do with machal. The answer of the Gemara is, no, we can't learn anything from that, because the only reason that that section is found there in the Mishnah is because of the parallel structure to the earlier part of the Mishnah, but it's not coming to teach us any chiddush. In a case where he does not have permission to appear in public with them, you're right, it is pshita that he can do it. But, nevertheless, we are in keeping with the parallel structure of the Mishnah, tell you that you're allowed to lend these items out. And obviously all these items are milta de psika. These are items that are very clear that that is the case, that they have nothing to do with machal, and there's no question that they have nothing to do with the preparation of machal, and that's why it would be permitted to lend these items out. The Ran notes over here that the question of Rav Papa then is no longer resolved, because we tried to resolve it from our Mishnah. But since now we can no longer resolve it from our Mishnah, we're left in a case where we do not know the answer to the question of Rav Papa. And therefore, the inyan halacha by Rav Papa lo ifshita was never concluded. Ilkach naktinim ba lechumra. Therefore, we pass in the chumra with regards to Rav Papa, and we assume that these items are considered to be problematic. The Ramban over here discusses an issue with regards to the Gemara in Baba Batra, where in Baba Batra it seems to indicate that people are makpid on their property and they don't let people just walk through there all the time. So the Ramban comes up with a distinction which is very important. He says that in a case where a person is going through that property and he's going to tarry a little bit, he's going to stand there a little bit, or he's going to park there a little bit, in that case there is hakpada between individuals, and a person will not let you go through their yard in that manner. On the other hand, if a person is simply just going through there as a shortcut and quickly traversing the area, then people are generally not makpid on that issue. And that's why our Gemara over here is talking about that situation, a case in which there's no hakpada of individuals walking into that area. And since there's no hakpada, then it should not be a problem of gaining hana'a from it, because people don't have hakpada. Where people have akbada is instead of just walking through there, you're doing standing, idling, parking, all of those items. If you do them, then there is a akbada. And that's what the Gemara in Baba Batra is speaking about. And then the Elinyan Psak Halacha, the Ramban says that the Halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer, Damar Vitur Asur, Kevin the Stam Lantana, Hocha Kabatei. Because our Mishnah is a Stam Mishnah, and our Stam Mishnah is following that position of Rabbi Eliezer. So that gives extra weight to the position of Rabbi Eliezer, and we paskin like him. But then he says, Aval, the Rabbeinu Chanano, in Cheskat Abatim says that the late Hilchotok Rabbi Eliezer, v'chein dat Rabbeinu Tam Zal. And Rabbeinu Tam agrees as well that the Halacha is not like Rabbi Eliezer. So we have a machloket in the Rishonim as to whether the Halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer or not, based on our Gemara, as well as reconciling it with the Gemara in Baba Batra. Alright, the next Mishnah says, v'chol davar she'en osim bo ochel nefesh, makom she'maskirim ki yotz ben asur. So even utensils that are not used in the processing of the food, one can lend those items out only in an instance where they normally would not receive remuneration for that, that normally someone would pay them in order to utilize that object. So in this case, if he gives that object to this individual, that he is mudar ma'achal, so even though it's not ma'achal and only hana'ah, because he's not charging him for the utilization of the item. So even though it's not directly associated with ma'achal, the fact that you would garner benefit from the fact that he's not charging you the sachar, the rental, or the normal fees that are associated with utilizing this item, that's enough to be restricted under ma'achal, because money also brings you the day ma'achal. Just like the utensils are items that are hana'ah mevi'ali day ma'achalcha, so too, other items or the foregone rental expense that he would have to pay, that monies or those monies could be utilized towards the purchase of food, and therefore they're also deemed to be hana'ah mevi'ah lidei ma'achal. Now the Gemara says, Michlal deresha afal pi she'en maskirin. Now you're implying in our part of this part of the Mishnah that the Mishnah that we read at the beginning of the Perek, utensils you may not lend out, even if they're not normally rented out. So for instance, the nafa, the kvara, all those ochel nefesh utensils, there you're restricted from lending them out, even if people don't usually charge for lending them out. Mantano. Who's the Tana that says that that's already considered to be enough hana'ah that it would be restricted in terms of amanah mevi'ali de machal? There you're saying that even a case of a rechayim or a tanur, where the person wouldn't charge for it anyway, and you go utilize it, so you're getting some benefit from it, it's a minimal amount of benefit. It's a nice thing, it's a nice benefit, but it's not real, real benefit. The answer to that, who is the author of such a position? That is, once again, Amravada Barava Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says that even vitur is asur b'mudarana. Vitur is considered to be the relinquishment of your rights or not exercising your rights in a certain situation is considered to be benefit, and that benefit would be restricted in this case. Tosafot already says, wait, did you just tell us before that the first part of the Mishnah is Rabbi Eliezer? Now you're telling this part's like Rabbi Eliezer. Doesn't seem like this is a big chiddush already, because it would be make a lot of sense that it's consistently his opinion throughout the Mishnayot here. So Tosafot says, because the chiddush over here is V'yesh Lomar, because of Rabbi Eliezer, the diuk out of our Mishnah now that we just read, where they were meduktek that it's like Rabbi Eliezer, then from that you can then know the din with regards to the first Mishnah, because you could have created a case in which the first Mishnah applied not only according to Rabbi Eliezer, but even according to the Chachamim. This second part of the Mishnah, where it can only be explained according to Rabbi Eliezer, that already is evidence of the fact that Rabbi Eliezer is the author here, and once we know it here, we'll also extrapolate that to the first part of the Mishnah and say that consistently Rabbi Eliezer is the author of the Mishnah over here. The Rishonim here do discuss a situation in which the individual is willing to pay the rent in a case where people do charge a fee for the utilization of such a utensil. Question is, in that case, if he's paying him the full amount, is that considered to be as if he's not getting hana'ah from this individual because he's paying for the privilege? Or do we still say that there is some sort of yachas, a relationship that is developed between two parties who enter into such an engagement, that there is hana'ah, even if it's paid for fully and there is compensation associated with it? So Rishonim come out in different directions here in an instance where he does pay for the benefit as to whether that's mutar under this nether that restricts him in hana'at ma'achal. All right, next Mishnah. Amudar hana'ah mechaviro. This is a Mishnah that we saw in the Gemara in Ketubot, and we spent time on it in the Gemara in Ketubot, which is a person who is restricted in receiving benefit from his friend, shokelo et shiklo, that individual who's not allowed to provide hana'a to that individual who's under the restriction, he is allowed to pay his shekel. Over here we're talking about the machatzita shekel. Uporea et chovo, he can repay his loans or his debts. Umachzirlo et avedoto, and he can return to him his lost objects. With regards to machzirlo et avedoto, that's the easiest one to understand because machzirlo et avedoto is doing a mitzvah. So if you're doing the mitzvah and you're doing it because the Torah commanded you to do it, then you're really not providing a hana'ah to this individual. Even though, truthfully, if you didn't engage in the mitzvah, it would have been hard for this person to get his object back because you're making an effort. You are going out of your way to pick up the item, to ensure that it's taken back properly, and then get it to the person who lost it. Is that really hana'ah? So over here, many of the Rishonim come up with the distinction, which will become important later in the Gemara, which is there's a difference between what we call hana'ah yeshira, a direct benefit, versus hana'ah that comes in an indirect method. Hana'ah that comes in an indirect way, there we will not consider it to be restricted when you have this Isur hana'ah. The other hand, when we're talking about hana'ah that's much more direct, then over there we would restrict it. So over here, machzirlo avedoto, then he's doing a mitzvah. So as far as the mitzvah is concerned, there's no problem of giving this under individual hana'ah. And the fact that you also returned the object or you got it back to him, that isn't something where you're handing him money. It's not where you're handing him some sort of benefit that has he can monetize in any way. You're simply returning his own object, which is his. And you exerted or expended effort on that behalf. That's indirect benefit that you're providing to that individual. Now, as far as uporeat chovo, that he's able to pay down his loans, this is very difficult. And the Gemara in Ketubot explains it and spends time on it. All the Rishonim tried to explain why over here, by poret chovo, this is not considered to be granting him hana'ah. The Gemara will make an ukimta in the Mishnah to say it's a specific case where he's not providing him hana'ah by the repayment of the loan. And shokelo et shiklo, he pays for his machatzita shekel. Over there, you could invoke the issue of mitzvah, that the person is obligated to do a mitzvah. But over here, you don't have an obligation or a mitzvah to pay for your friend's machatzita shekel. So what most of the Rishonim say is that this individual would have rights to be a participant in all the korbanot tzibur, even if he never paid his machatzita shekel. Now, the truth is that when it comes to that machatzita shekel, we are mimashkanim. We try to compel the individuals to pay it, and therefore we take collateral to force them to pay it. And so it's not simply you could just say, oh, if I didn't pay it, then I wouldn't have to pay it because I'm still getting my portion in the korbanot tzibur. If that's the case, then when you pay on his behalf, okay, is in terms of his being a part of Klal Yisrael and benefiting from the korbanot tzibur, that already is something that he can claim you didn't benefit him because he could have gotten it if he didn't pay the shekel back. On the other hand, if he's responsible to get the shekel, the machatzita shekel to the mikdash, and we're going to take a mashkon collateral to force him to do it and to pay it, and then when his friend comes and pays on his behalf, that really is hana'ah that he is providing for him. So what most of the Rishonim say, it's a case, or they make ukimtot in this case, so that it's a case that actually happens after the point at which he is responsible for paying the machatzita shekel. For instance, if it, after the trumat lishka already had been separated or pulled off, and then he loses the coin or the machatzita shekel gets lost by the shliach, then in that case, they just have to take a shvuah that they sent the machatzita shekel, and he does not have to replace it. Now, it could be that it's a minhag tov, it would be a nice thing for him to replace it, but he's not obligated to replace it. And therefore, when you pay the shekel on his behalf, you may be taking away maybe some bad feeling that he had about it, or maybe the minhag that people generally did pay it, but that's all you're taking away. Then, makom shnot lima leaschar, in a location in which those people that return the avedah get rewarded, like they have all the time, lost and found, reward for the return of the object. If they paid rewards in that instance, tipol anal hekdesh, then that benefit should go to hekdesh. And tomorrow's daf, the Gemara will deal with what exactly is the scenario. Gemara in Ketubot, if you remember, talked about a scenario in which they were mutually restricted in getting hana'ah from each other. Therefore, if the party who is supposed to receive the hana'ah gets it, then he's getting a benefit. If he refuses to take the payment, then the party who should have been paying it is actually getting a benefit from the fact that he is waiving his right to this schar. This schar here for returning the object, Obviously, it's not directly associated with the mitzvah itself, because the mitzvah stands independently. But rather, the Rambam in the Perush Mishnayot says the fact that there was a system of rewards, or a minog, to give a reward. And therefore, if the person accepts it, he's actually getting benefit. And if he denies it, then the person who's supposed to pay it to him is getting a benefit, and that would cause a problem. Other Rishonim suggest that here we're talking about compensation for the schar batala, the fact that you left your normal course of work in order to be metapel in this aveda and take care of this aveda, then you're entitled to a schar batala. Whether that means now that you can't take any of the schar batala because of the fact that you're restricted in hana'ah, which would go back to what we discussed earlier, whether you can take fair compensation for something when you're asur b'hana'ah, or we're speaking in a case where you can't take in excess of what your true schar batala was. Schar batala, that you're entitled to get compensated for. So that you can take compensation for, because that's not hana'ah, that's just paying him what his losses were, or what his foregone opportunities were, and that's why you're paying over there, so you're not being mehanehim. But anything in excess of that would be problematic, and maybe that's what's generating the problem over here, is that we can't either segregate or get exactly what belongs to you for your schar batala, what might be excess, which would be a problem of hana'ah. Therefore, tibao hana'ah l'ekdesh. That hana'ah goes to hekdesh. The run over here indicates that it's specifically hekdesh, because here we're talking about konamot, and konamot have a similar structure, and maybe even similar restrictions like hekdesh. And therefore over here, the proper thing to dispose of it is to give this hana'ah to hekdesh, to give it directly to hekdesh. Others still say, hana'ah l'ekdesh is just an example of a way to get rid of this item without either party benefiting from it. So whether you throw it into Yam HaMelech or you give it hana'ah l'ekdesh, then you are making sure that neither party is benefiting from the reward, and either any of those would work. So that is difference of opinion within the Rishonim as to how exact we are when we say here hana'ah l'ekdesh. Alma, the Mar says here, from our Mishnah you could conclude that avruche ari ba'almahu vishari, that all he's doing over here is removing the lion that's coming in for the kill, and that is mutar. Meaning that in this instance, the individual would have some sort of pressure, or individual was chasing him down for, in the case of the shekel, where they possibly could come after him in order to force him to pay the machatzita shekel, or the minag, or the nice thing to do is to give the machatzita shekel. Then in each of those cases, when you come and you pay on his behalf, and you prevent him from having to pay it, all you've done is taken away the lion that's coming to attack the flock. So all of a sudden the lion's coming to attack the flock. You're not in charge of its flock. It's not even your flock. It has nothing to do with you. So you go ahead and chase away the lion. So when you chase away the lion, you can't come now to the owner of the flock and say, you owe me money because I chased away the lion. So, and that's the case also over here, where he pays down a loan for him, or he pays his debt. It's not the case that he's giving him direct benefit. All he's doing is preventing the creditor from coming after him, from preventing the Mikdash or the Gizbarim coming after him from the Machatzita Shekel. So it's the equivalent of chasing away the lion, so the lion doesn't bother him. In that case, you're not due any compensation for that. Mantano, who's the author that believes this? Rabbi Hoshaya, Zohu Divrei Chananhi. This is the reason we remember seeing it in Ketubot, because there we had the machlok between Chanan and the Bnei Kohanim Agdolim. So here, he's suggesting that our Mishnah is authored by Chanan. Rehovo Amar Afilu Tema Divrei Akol. Doesn't just have to be Chanan. It could be even according to everyone. The Gabe Mudarana Deyahiv Almanach Lo Difroa. By the case of Mudarana, it's a case in which he granted the loan, the creditor granted the loan, without any obligation to repay it, or there was no time frame in which he had to repay it. So in that case, even the Chachamim would agree that in such an instance, you're not providing him any benefit if you pay down the loan, because he wouldn't have been under pressure to pay down that loan, because there is no time expiry on that loan. And since there's no time expiry, the individual wasn't under pressure. If you go and pay on his behalf, you really haven't created anything or helped him in any way. So my Chanan, where do we find this Machloket of Chanan? It's obviously the Mishnah in Ketubot, which is Mishalach Lemidinat Hayam, person who's traveling overseas, V'amad Echad U'Pirneset Ishto. And an individual was nice, altruistic individual, says, you know what, let me take care of his wife, his family, while he's overseas, because how are they going to survive? Somebody's got to take care of them. And then, when the husband comes back from being overseas, this individual says, you got to pay me. I've been taking care of your family all this time, you got to pay me. Hanamar ibedit maltav. The person who put out his money to do this lost his money. Nechduku alav b'nei kohanim agdolim. The b'nei kohanim agdolim disagree with Hanan's position. Vamru ishava kama hutzi vito. Takes a shvua as to what his expenditures were. He can take repayment of whatever monies that he laid out on behalf of this individual's wife or children. Ben Amar Bidosa ben Erkinis, Kedivrehem. Bidosa ben Erkinis says that I believe that the B'nai Kwanim Dolim are correct. Amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Yafeh Amar Hanan. Rabbi Zakkai supports this opinion of Hanan by saying, I think he is correct because Eniach Ma'utav al Karen Tzvi. He left his money on the antlers of a deer, and that the deer takes off at high speed. If you leave anything of yours on his antlers, you're not going to see it anymore. Same thing over here. This individual put up the money on behalf of this woman or these children. He was throwing his money out the window. There's no way that he's going to receive any repayment for that. So that's why he thinks that Hanan HaMitzri is correct, because this individual threw his money in without any responsibility from the parties on the other side to repay him, because he didn't make any demands. He simply did it of his own volition. Rava lo amar k'Rav Hoshaya. Rava doesn't like the explanation of Hoshaya. The kamukim lo lematnit and k'divrei Yaakov, because Rava can set up our Mishnah as being according to everybody, according to Hanan, as well as the B'nai Kohanim Agdolim. Because as we explained, it was a case where the loan was done in such a manner that there would be no pressure to repay the loan, and therefore you didn't benefit him by having it repaid. But Rav Hoshaya lo amar k'Rav. Why does Rav Hoshaya not agree with Rava's position? Gezeira. Shaloli para, mishumli para. It's a gzeira for a loan in which there is no end date or expiry date. Gzeira to most loans which do have an expiry date in it. So we're afraid if we let the individual repay loans that have no time limit on them, then they also come to repay loans when there is a time limit on it, which would be problematic. Because of that, gzeira, Rav Hoshaya does not subscribe to Rava's position, because the chachamim, even in this instance, would say that it's problematic, because in other instances think it's a problem. So because in this instance where you don't have to repay it, we worry about the cases where you would have to repay it, and therefore we would not allow you in this case to repay it. On the other hand, Hanan HaMitzri, who says that you never repay the money, then there's no reason for a gzeira, because there's never a case where you do have to repay the monies. Right now, the Gemara in Ketubot actually ends off slightly differently than our Gemara over here. Gemara in Ketubot actually mentions that the difference between the opinion of Hanan and the B'nai Kohanim HaGdolim might have to do with the nature of a loan that has no expiry to it. A loan that has no expiry to it, then why should there be any dissenting opinion with regards to what happens in that case? Because, L'divrei Yaakov, that it should be a fine way to grant Hana'a, because the individual is not getting anything from you. Gemara over there says, Mishum Kisufa, because of embarrassment. That even though there's no obligation to repay the loan, so every time you see this individual, or every time he eats over his house, he feels terrible that he hasn't repaid him the money. So there is this embarrassment that he is saving him from, or providing him a benefit, and that's what the machloket over there is. Is that a sufficient amount of hana'a that we consider as if he did something for this individual or on behalf of this individual? Or do we say, either way, he didn't have to pay the loan back, and therefore he's not really granting him any benefit or any hana over here? And that would be the difference between Rava and Rav Hoshaya's explanation over here, is whether it can be Divrei Yaakov. According to Rav Hoshaya, you can't say Divrei Yaakov, because the Rabbanan still think there's a problem here, because you're saving the guy from the embarrassment every time he sees him, and therefore you should have to pay the money back. On the other hand, Hanan believes in none of those instances would you have to paid the money back. Now, in the Gemara in Ketubot, we mentioned at the time when we learned the Gemara in Ketubot, the Shita of the Rabbeinu Tam over there with regards to that Mishnah about Poreat Chovo is in the context of the Gemara there. The Rabbeinu Tam says it's only about a case where an individual, like is explained here by Hanan, is only in a case where he provided monies or food for the wife and the children of this individual who traveled overseas. That's the only instance where Hanan says the guy lost his money and can't get it back, because he didn't provide him any hana'a. Whereas in a normal case of a loan, he is providing hana'a. He's paying the loan down, and if he's doing that, then he is entitled to a repayment. Similar to other cases where a person of his own volition does something to the benefit of a party, he can demand compensation back for at least his outlays or his costs here if the individuals benefiting from whatever outlays or whatever he did. So that's that way the Rabbeinu Tam deals with this issue of Poreyat Chovo. How do you get the case of Poreyat Chovo to be okay and not be a problem providing Hana'ah for this individual, or that if you are providing enough from an individual, he should have to repay you? Rabbeinu Tam narrows it to this one case of a case of the wife and children are left behind when the husband's overseas. And of course, the husband must either have left them something, or their Masei Yadayim could pay for it. Or if they were mistapik bimuat, they ate a little more frugally, they would have been able to make it. And that's what the husband's claim is. You really didn't help me out. They would have made it through. They would have scrambled to do some things to raise some money and they would have been fine. Or eaten a little less, not such a luxurious style. And therefore your lending the money to them was completely unnecessary because I wouldn't have to be paying this, because had you not done this, they would have dealt with the issue on their own. On the other hand, the other Rishonim who believe that Upareyat Chovo is any instance of Upareyat Chovo, we mentioned already before the difference between Hana'a Yeshira, direct Hana'a, versus indirect Hana'a. And over there, they deem Upareyat Chovo to be indirect Hana'a, because you're not handing the money directly to him, but rather you're repaying the loan, which now affords him the ability not to have to repay the loan. And that's the reason that Poreyat Chovo is considered to be mutar. The Rosh, also over here, has a formulation. He says that Buadin Achanami Lechol Chov Shalav V'Madzeh Paro V'Zilo Amarlo Helveni. And the individual said, "Let me the money so I can pay this other loan back." He never states that. Enu Chayav Lo Klum. He doesn't pay anything. V'Kevan Dilu Parei L'Shem Halva'a Lav Halva'a. And since if the individual went ahead and gave the money and says, "I'm lending it to him, the money to pay you back," it would still not be considered to be a loan, because the other party never agreed to it. Again, over here, if he's paying him off in order to release him from the loan, then the same thing over there. He didn't do anything because nobody asked him to do it, and nobody can obligate the other party in that instance. Tosafot over here mentions all these different possibilities of how the guy can say, "Look, you really didn't benefit me when you paid down the loan." Because he could say, "Yesh lomar, yechol lomar b'chov l'poreya chovo." The debtor can say, the person who pays off on his behalf, "Mifaisinan le." I would have convinced the creditor, I could have talked him into it, to machili, that he would forgive it to me, he would waive the need for the payment. "V'afilu b'mashkon." Tosafot says here, even if there's collateral there, I could have talked him into it. I'm a smooth talker. I would have got the collateral back and wouldn't have been an issue at all. Hilkach love bari chezeka. And therefore, the chezek is not so obvious in that case. In the Yerushalmi, it seems to indicate that if it's a case of mashkon, then he would have to repay the loan. Because in the case of mashkon, the creditor doesn't really care. The debtor defaults on the loan. He just takes the mashkon, the collateral that's there. And since he'll take the collateral, then this individual who paid down the loan really did save him. Because had he not paid the loan, he would have lost his collateral. And so now when he pays the loan, he benefits the debtor by having his mashkon be returned to him. And so based on that, the person would have to repay the individual because he did provide what was a clear benefit to him in protecting the debtor from the creditor taking his mashkon. On the other hand, Tosafot over here says that may not be the case, because this guy says he's such a smooth talker, he could have even gotten his mashkon back. And therefore, you really did not benefit him. What Tosafot says over here about Bari Chazeka is actually a very, very important distinction that Tosafot makes, which is, in the case of Mavriach Ari, in the case of, for instance, there is a lion coming to attack the flock of a certain individual, somebody sees the lion coming, and then he hires people, or he runs out, and he takes things, and he loses money doing this, but he succeeds at scaring the lion away, or getting the lion away, and protecting the flock of this individual. Over there, the halacha is that he can go to that individual and say, "I expended this money on your behalf to help you out. Please repay me." And he would be obligated to pay him in that case. So the truth is, in the case of Mavriach Ari, you do get compensation. So why not the same thing over here? If he's Mavriach Ari in the pay down of the loan, why don't we say the exact same thing over here, which is that he should be compensated for the fact that he saved him from the creditor? So Tosafot distinguishes between what's called Bari Chazeka and Lo Bari Chazeka. Somewhere where the damage or the loss is so clear that when you're Mavriach Ari, there you can demand payment or compensation for it. Other case where it's not Bari Chazeka, it's not so clear or obvious that this individual is being benefited or protected by what the action this person takes, there he can't make demands on payment. That's what it says. The lav mavriachu kaven de bari chazeka shimlo ikdimari ayahu chela beimot. In the case of the flock, that's not called mavriachari, but rather something that's where the chazek is so obvious, where there's a clear and present danger, and therefore his saving from the animal really is clear that he saved him that money and his flock. There he has to make compensation. Aval by porechuvo. That is not the case, and that's what Tosva just explained over here, that it's not bari hazeka, because the guy could talk his way out of the obligations that he has to the creditor. Right, the Ran over here mentions that the Rashba says that this case here is dafka b'mifaresh shemachmat mizonot shechayav la bala hunutein la. That all of this case where he loses his money is only in a case where he specifically states that he's giving the money for the mizonot that her husband should have given to her. That case, Chanan says you're patur. Aval, pirnes, stam. If he just gave her money to support her, but he doesn't specifically state it's for the ma'achal, choser ve'gove. Then he can go back and take it. If he should call him mifrnes, stam, enu mifrnes, b'torat matanal, b'torat halva. So a person does that, he's not just giving the money to her as a gift, he's certainly doing it in as a loan to this woman. And if this woman takes out a loan, then her husband's responsible to pay back the loan. The Ran in the end disagrees with this and says that he thinks it's completely incorrect. And he says that even if the individual gave the money without saying anything, it's still deemed to be a matana, a gift, and not a halva'a, because many people don't know the din. Most people don't know the din that if you lend money to the woman, that the husband has to back up her debts. He knew the woman doesn't have any money to pay him back. He knows that there's no collateral, and therefore when he gives it to her, he's not giving it to her, b'torat halva'a. But if he knows that the din is that the husband has to pay it back, and he lends the money to the woman, then the husband would be responsible for paying back the loan. And therefore, the Ran says that in a stam case, if you do not say specifically that you're lending her the money, it's still deemed to be like as if it's a matana, as if you're here throwing your money away. And Chanan would say that even in an instance where you didn't specify that it was for the mizonot or for the farnes et ha'isha. All right, we said in the Mishnah that he's allowed to be machzir lo avedato. He's allowed to return to him any lost object. Pligiba Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Asi. Chanamar lo shanu elo shibinichzei machzir asurim al balaveda. That's only true when the possessions of the returner are restricted to the owner of the lost object. Techim adele midam denafshe kam adele. Because when he returns the object, he's giving him back what belongs to him. It's the balaveda's object. In the case where the nechassim, the possessions of the person making the return, are restricted on the person that he's returning the item to, over there it's fine, because when he returns the item to that individual who lost it, he's just giving him back what rightfully belongs to him. And since he's just giving back what rightfully belongs to him, the bala veda, the owner of the lost object, is not getting any benefit from the person who's returning the object, because when he gives him back, he's giving him back what was already owned from him, and therefore he's not giving him benefit from his possessions. In a case where the possessions of the owner of the lost object are restricted unto the one who's returning them, lo kamahadule, he cannot then return it. He then cannot perform the mitzvah of Hashavata Veda, the kamahanile bepruto de Rav Yosef, because then the person that is returning the object benefits from the pruta de Rav Yosef, which is the fact that while he is osek in the aveda, then he is patur from other mitzvot. We invoke the principle of osek b'mitzvah, patur mina mitzvah, as is noted in the Gemara and other places. When we talk about here osek b'mitzvah shavat aveda, that means that he has to literally be engaged in the mitzvah. So therefore, if he's taking care of the aveda or doing something with the aveda, that would exempt him from other mitzvot. One possible mitzvah that could come up during that time is if an ani, a poor person, shows up the door looking for a tzedakah. If you're being mitapel and dealing with the avedah actively, then you would be exempted from paying the ani, the charity, when he came to the door. And then you get to keep more money, meaning that you're actually a beneficiary in that sense of this pruta de Rav Yosef, which derives from his possession that you have, his possession which was lost, that you're now holding to help him out. That possession just gave you hana'ah because it just exempted you from having to pay tzedakah or having to pay the ani. So that pruta de Rav Yosef then means that there is hana'ah from the nechassim of the Baal Avedah to the individual who is returning the Avedah, because he gets this benefit of Osik Mitzvah Potur Min HaMitzvah. Now, according to those Rishonim, unlike the Rabbeinu Tam, who believe that the Poreyat Chovo is talking about any case of a loan, and the reason they explained over there that there's no Hana'ah, because we differentiated between direct Hana'ah versus indirect Hana'ah, this case of Pruta de Rabbi Yosef should be a case of indirect Hana'ah, and why then is it not mutar for the individual to engage in the Hachzarat HaVedah, even if he gets some indirect benefit through this Pruta de Rabbi Yosef? Why is that not deemed to be okay, like it is in the case of Pereyat Chovo? So Tosafot goes back to his explanation of Bari Chazeka, and he explains it in those terms. He says that we said before that when the Chazek is not Bari, then the individual is not getting direct Hana'ah, and he won't have to make compensation for it, and also it's not restricted under an Isra Hana'ah. Whereas in a case where it's Bari Chazeka, where it's very clear that the Hezek was there and it was prevented, then you would have to make restitution, and therefore it is considered to be Hana'ah if someone pays on your behalf. So Tosafot over here explains that the case of Pruta de Rabbi Yosef is a case of Bari Hezeka, because Aval Hocha Magzir Atzmo Kimavriya Chari Me'al Atzmo. In this case, it's as if you're taking the lion away from yourself. You're chasing away the lion from yourself. Ayadesh Mitasek Bavadet Chaviro, because when you engage in the Aved of your friend, it's as if you're putting up a shield or protecting yourself from those quote-unquote losses of giving tzedakah. Vari Eliu Notel Mikiso Shel Baal Avedah. It's as if he's taking money out of the pocket of the individual who owns the Avedah, but not know the Ani, and grants it to the Ani. It's as if he becomes an intermediary here, and that saving of the money is as if he's taking cash from the Baal Avedah and handing it straight to the Ani. Hachanami, that is also true by the case of Poreya Chovo. If the Baal Chov, if the debtor in that case takes the money from the person who is paying on his behalf and then hands it to the creditor, then that would be Asur, because he intervened, he interjected in the situation, and even though, again, the Hana'ah is quote-unquote indirect, the fact that he's actually actively involved already tells us that it's not mutar, kamo ken haya asur, and it would be asur in that case. So to over here, by the Baal Avedah, when he protects himself, and he's chasing away the lion for his own benefit, it's the equivalent of getting money from the Baal Avedah and handing it over to the Ani, because the Baal Avedah, in a sense, is paying off the Ani, so that this individual doesn't have to pay the Ani. That's all figurative. Obviously, the Ani gets nothing in this case, but figuratively, the Baal Avedah is as if he's paying off the Ani to stay away from this individual, and it's as if the money passed through him, and it becomes much more yashir, or direct Hana'ah, and that's why it's restricted over here. In addition, Tosafot says he can't just give away that benefit to Hekdesh, or somehow disgorge that benefit, because it's not clear what the benefit was. We don't know how many Ani'im he was exempted from paying. We don't know how much he would have given to the Ani'im. And since it's an amorphous amount, there's no way that he could disgorge those profits or that benefit, where, like we said before, to Pao Hana Al Hekdesh, it won't work in this instance because of the fact that it's not a fixed amount or clear amount of compensation. So that's the opinion of one of these Amuraim, which is that in a case where the possessions of the returner are asurim on the owner of this lost object, in that case, it's mutar, because again, he's not giving any benefit to this party through his possessions. He's simply giving his own possession back to him. On the other hand, when the case is reversed, where the nechasim of the Baal Avedah are restricted on the person trying to make the return and do a Shafat Avedah over here, in that case, he would not be allowed to return the object, because his working with this Avedah and return the object actually gives him benefit, which is the Pruta de Rav Yosef, which would exempt him from other mitzvot to the mitzvah of giving tzedakah. On the other hand, V'chad Amar, one of these two Amoraim explains, Afilu nechsei Baal Avedah asurim ha-machzir, even an instance where the possessions of Baal Avedah are restricted on the person making the return, Mahadalei, he's still allowed to return it. Omishum Pruta de Rav Yosef. What about the fact that Pruta de Rav Yosef does provide him a benefit? Shum de Pruta de Rav Yosef lo shchiach. Because that issue of Pruta de Rav Yosef is not so common. Here the Rosh says, what does it mean it's not so common? She's dam lo ani bo tosha. Who says that the ani will walk in exactly that moment when he's being metapel in the Aveda? The only time he would get that exemption of Pruta de Rav Yosef is if the ani shows up at exact moment when he's being metapel in the Aveda. And that's lo shchiach. Or as Rashi says over here, Rashi says that it's less likely or uncommon that the clash between these mitzvot would have you end up not paying charity or giving something to the ani. So a person, even though maybe technically might be patur from the mitzvah of tzedakah, because who is the mitzvah patur min mitzvah, Rashi suggests here it's unlikely that someone would take advantage of that patur. In all likelihood, he would pay it, and the pruter of Yosef won't end up helping out in this case or causing him an Easter hana'ah. And the Ran explains, well, because it's not shchiach, therefore one of two things. Either, kevin delo shchiach lo bi'ah bichlal Easter hana'ah, since it's not a common occurrence, when a person takes a nether hana'ah, he would not have had that in mind or subsumed under the Easter hana'ah, because it's such an uncommon occurrence. Or because it's such a lo shchiach case, it's considered to be de minimis hana'ah, and therefore it's not included under the category of hana'ah. But, miu, kevin de efsha de ati, since there is a possibility of him getting benefit from it, and it could happen, shomer sachar, strong enough to make him into a shomer sachar, chayav b'gneiva b'aveda. So despite the fact that we're suggesting over here that it's lo shchiach, that's lo shchiach in terms of whether we consider it to be hana'ah or not hana'ah. But with regards to deeming him a shomer sachar, pruta de Yosef, the potential for pruta de Yosef is sufficient to generate the hana'ah that would make him into a shomer sachar. Okay, we'll stop here on the last line on the bottom of Lamed Gimel Amud Bet.